You're listening to Bad Trip, the true crime and other weird shit podcast where two sisters take you on a wild ride through some of the world's most fucked up places. Each episode, we journey to a new location and explore its sordid past, creepiest urban legends, and landmarks you won't find in the guidebooks. So buckle up, because it's about to be a bad trip.
We interrupt this program because the civil authorities have issued a contagious disease warning.
911, where is your emergency?
The U.S. Navy has finally acknowledged that videos appearing to show UFOs flying through the air are real.
Initially, many thought the pops they heard were fireworks associated with the show, but soon it became obvious that this was an attack.
Hello, welcome back.
It has been forever. Welcome back to Bad Trip.
I'm Shauna.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm sick, so my voice is going to sound a little funny today.
But it's not COVID. We've been tested.
Yeah, not COVID, just some mysterious illness.
I'm also getting over a sickness, an illness, so I sound a little but Shauna sounds worse.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's my sultry, sexy voice.
I like when she sings in the car and then like no sound comes out.
Yeah, it's good because usually when sound comes out, it's bad. Yeah, so this is our podcast. It's been a minute, so it's going to take us probably a second to get back into it, but that's okay.
Yeah, we're going to get used to it. You're going to hear our awkwardness, which like what's new? We've been out because of holidays and life and...
Taylor went back to school.
Oh, I'm going to get my degree in... mortuary science.
Yes.
Whoop whoop. So yeah, I started classes and it's going to be a busy time.
It is, but we're going to make it work.
We're making it work.
Yeah. Also in other news, I started a TikTok.
She did actually. And I hate TikTok as I've said, but hers is interesting.
So check it out. It's Brash_Candicoot.
I'm going to say it. It's Brash_Candicoot. Like Crash Bandicoot flip-flopped.
Yes, exactly. It's a spoonerism.
Ooh, I didn't know that's what it was called.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, just like a little refresher on how this whole thing works. We're in Oregon this week. Every month or so, we pick a new state.
Yeah, and I do a story today. Shauna gives us background and just like tells us about the state some. Next week, we'll do a detour.
Just some fun little mini stories. Then after that, I'll tell you a story. And the following week, we do some headlines. So we're kind of all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's fun. We like it here.
We like to mix it up. I also have to say, thank fuck that Trump is out of office. There was a bit of a coup.
Just a small attempt at a coup.
Yeah, just, you know, trying to overthrow some shit and damage some shit and kill people and whatever. So just thank God.
Yeah. But also, you know, this stuff's not fine and okay. So.
No, not at all. We still got to do shit. We still have stuff that needs to happen. Yeah, but we can't be
complacent.
Yeah, we flipped the Senate and Biden's in office, but we have a lot of work to do.
Yes. Okay. So with that out of the way, oh, one last thing, a little disclaimer. We're going to talk shit. This is a true crime podcast, but we also talk about a bunch of other stuff. We go on tangents. It's just kind of how we are. If you're not into it, that's fine. If you don't want to hear jokes about crime, totally fine. But then we're not the podcast for you.
Yeah. There are other great podcasts you can check out. There's like zillions. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We're one of many, as you know.
Tread lightly.
So, okay. Now you want to talk about Oregon?
Now I want to talk about Oregon.
All right. I kept it short because my voice sounds like this and I don't want to torture you for too long.
Okay, good. Because, well, not good, but also my section is long.
All right. Cool. That's perfect.
Cool.
Okay, so we are heading south from Washington to Oregon, which has the lovely nickname, the Beaver State.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
The Beaver State.
I think it's cute. So Oregon's capital city is Salem. The state has a population of about 4 million people, and it's not that many people compared to its size. So it's actually like pretty nature-y and big and open.
Yes. Okay, I just went to Portland and traveled through Oregon, and it's beautiful. I'm obsessed.
Okay, so you can jump in here and tell me some stuff a little bit. But around 60% of the state is covered in forest. So did you see a lot of forest while you were there?
A lot of forest. We traveled like down the coast on Highway 1. So we got to see like the redwood trees and we got to see like the ocean. And The trees are so pretty there. They're so different than where we are in Georgia, obviously, or like where we were in Wisconsin. And there'll be like bark blown off all the trees because the wind from the storms on the ocean and stuff.
What?
It's like cool. And you'll see trees growing in one direction on the side of the road because that's the way the wind blows really hard.
They don't know they're beautiful.
I know, right? It changes the course of the tree.
I love it. That's so interesting. I would love to go there someday. But yeah, so it's a lot more than just forests. There are multiple mountain ranges and they have natural hot springs.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And a big portion of the state is actually desert too.
Oh my God, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so it's one of the most like geographically diverse states in the country.
Damn, I want to live there. I mean, Christopher and I are going to move there. It's our plan.
I love that for you.
Yes.
So I just have a couple quick pictures of like landscape just to show you. Okay, so this is just a hot spring that is absolutely gorgeous.
Just a hot spring. It's like the prettiest thing ever. It's like layers of different rocks really high up because you can see these big ass trees down below and it's so green and the water in the hot springs so blue.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I would love to go there.
I want to stick my feet in there.
And then this is a picture of the Alvar Desert. And a little kid riding a scooter across the desert.
But then there's like snowy ass mountains in the background.
Yeah.
And a beautiful blue sky. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool. So just want to show like the diversity of the landscape.
You did a good job.
All right, next I want to talk about something that's a little less fun, and that is race in Oregon.
Yay.
So Oregon has a really dark history when it comes to race, and it was actually founded as sort of like a white utopia.
Whoa, I did not know that.
Yeah, so they saw themselves as like sort of neutral when it came to slavery, but we all know that like you can't be neutral on slavery.
No.
They didn't allow slavery there, but that's just because they didn't allow black people, period.
Okay, so it's like real bad still.
Really bad. So in 1844, before they were officially a state, they passed what was called the Black Exclusion Law. Yeah, and that made it illegal for any black Americans to enter the region. Trigger warning for this. Breaking the law was punishable by a severe and violent beating. And if you didn't leave, they could do that every 6 months.
Oh my God. And they're just like waiting on their calendar for like the next time.
Yeah, I guess so.
What the fuck?
So when it did become a state in 1859, there was literally a whites only clause in the Constitution, and it wasn't eliminated until 1925.
I'm horrified.
And it gets worse. Even after that, there was racist terminology in the Constitution until a vote in 2002. But actually, almost 30% of voters wanted to keep the racist language in there.
Why?
Because they're racist.
Oh my God, but why do these people still exist?
I mean, look at our country.
I hate it.
They're everywhere.
I hate it.
They also have an extremely racist history against Asian Americans. And there were a lot of Japanese Americans who were forcibly imprisoned during World War II in internment camps in Oregon.
Jeez.
Yeah. So to this day, it's a super, super white state. So even though like Portland is considered kind of a liberal utopia, it's definitely not a diverse place. So the population there is 77% white.
Oh, wow.
And that's a city. Like most cities are very diverse.
Wow. Yeah.
But, you know, that's sort of reflected in the lovely show Portlandia.
It is true.
Ayo River. Oh, I love that show.
That's like my jam. That's my favorite thing to yell.
Christopher worked on that show.
Christopher.
Sorry, my voice. I can't help it. All right. Oh, you know, I also have to talk about the Oregon Trail.
You must. Oh, my God.
Okay. So not the computer game we all played as kids where you die of dysentery.
Oh.
But, you know, the actual trail.
Not interested.
So this is the route that people took when they traveled west to live in Oregon during the 1800s. It's over 2,000 miles long and it spans from Missouri to Oregon. Starting in the 1830s, people would load up a wagon, get some oxen, and they would spend like 6 months just trekking across the country and dying a lot.
I can't fathom. I was like talking about Donner Pass and all that, like yeah, the Donner Party. And this too. I can't imagine just like venturing out into the world and like having to be in a wagon for that long and just like, what am I gonna find?
I know, especially with like a lot of times you'd go with people you didn't actually know. You would just like team up.
Or you'd have like a newborn or I just cannot. I would just easily have like died off in that time.
You probably would have because 10% of people who traveled on the Oregon Trail ended up dying during their travels.
Wow. I actually would assume that it was more, but 10% still a lot.
I mean, 1 in 10, like that's a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. I'm almost done because my voice can't take it anymore. So these are some random facts about Oregon. First of all, it's one of 5 states with no sales tax. So that's kind of cool, I guess.
Interesting.
Yeah. They produce 99% of the country's hazelnuts.
99%?
Mm-hmm. And do you know what they call hazelnuts? Not everyone, but some people call them a different word.
Whackums.
I like that, but no. They're called Filberts.
Filberts with a F or a PH?
An F.
Nice.
Sounds like a kid's name. Or not a kid. It sounds like an old man's name.
Hey, Filbert, get over here.
I like it. And then I want to know if you experienced this when you were there. So in much of the state, it's illegal to pump your own gas.
Yeah, we couldn't pump our own gas. Oh. It was crazy. So they had like they'll have an attendant out there in like a vest, a yellow reflective vest so they don't get hit, hopefully. And they're just like running around. They get your card and they start your card for you, or you go inside and pay. But it was so weird. I was so like, about it.
Yeah, that's so strange. I wonder why they do that.
Well, I asked Christopher if like we should tip them, and he was like, no, you don't tip them. I don't know. So I was just like, okay.
Interesting. I know they have that some places in Massachusetts, but not many. And they definitely have it in New Jersey too. And I remember driving through on my way home from college with mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And dad tried to tip the guy. And the guy was like, no, it's okay. We don't take tips. And dad like made him take the tip.
Oh my God. Dad would do that. He's like, well, let me at least buy you a sandwich.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Also, there was something that I would see on the signs when we were driving that said it would be a gas station. And then there was a word underneath it. And I don't remember. Sorry. And I didn't know what it meant. So I looked it up. And it meant that those were gas stations that you can like pump your own gas at or something.
Interesting.
It was like, yeah, some kind of, you know, I don't know it, but something like that.
Cool. Okay. Well, I'm like all over the place with these facts, but Oregon's Willamette Valley is known for its iconic Pinot Noir. So definitely check that out if you're into wine.
Ooh, I should have had that. I love Pinot.
Yeah. Well, I bet we can get some in our wink.
Ooh, wink, wink.
Wink, wink. Oh, no.
We always do that.
Why? What's wrong with us?
What's wrong with so much?
Oh, man. All right. Last fun fact. In the 2020 election, Oregon became the first state to legalize psychedelic mushrooms.
What?
Yeah. So you can just, you know, take some shrooms and have fun. Have a little trip.
Oregon is so fun. I was in like a heaven situation when I went into my first dispensary. I was stressed out. There were so many options. I was asking the woman everything. I was just like, what is this? Tell me about these edibles. Tell me about this. You can like get pre-roll. I just need to stop talking about it. But
that's so wild. It's just like a different world from here, even though it's the same country.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can order delivery. And I ordered online and then went and just picked it up and it was ready.
Amazing. The future is now, people.
The future is now. Legalized marijuana in all states.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's it. My throat is officially raw.
Ew, I hate that.
I couldn't think of another word. I tried. I paused. I thought about it. I couldn't.
When you started to say raw, I thought you were going to say wrecked. And I was like, I'm okay with wrecked.
It's wrecked.
I'm not okay with raw. All right. We're going to do a bit of an ad break so you guys can all forget that Shauna just said her throat is raw. And we'll be back to horrify you.
You're welcome.
Hi, we're back.
Welcome.
Oh, gosh. I'm leaving. Bye.
I'm trying to preserve my vocal cords for my singing career.
She's going to be a star.
For my TikTok career.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay, so we're going to jump right into this. We're going to start off with a definition. And I know you know this, but some people might not. So I figure a refresher is always good. We are going to talk about familicide.
Oh, awesome. Very excited.
Trey exciting. According to our all-knowing Wikipedia, which I think actually had the best definition I saw to like explain it easily, a familicide is a type of murder in which a perpetrator kills multiple close family members in quick succession, most often children, relatives, spouse, siblings, or parents. It becomes a murder-suicide familicide when the assailant takes their own life at the end of the killings.
Horrifying. It's always men, too. Almost always.
Yeah, surprise. You'll see. If only the parents are killed, the case may be referred to as a parricide. And when all members of a family are killed, the crime can also be referred to as a family annihilation.
I'm glad we have so many terms for murdering your family.
I mean, it's so common. So from December 2001 to December 2002, in literally a 12-month period, there were 3 family massacres committed across Oregon.
What?
Yeah.
In 1 year?
Yep. Rightly so, experts were surprised by this unusual cluster, and they began contemplating what drives men to kill their families. Because, shocker, all 3 of the ones I'm going to tell you about were done by men.
White men.
White men, yep. Charles Patrick Ewing, who is, or maybe was, a law professor and forensic psychologist at the University of Buffalo Law School, said, It's extraordinary. It really defies all probability that you would have that many familicides in that short period of time.
Well, it happened. I wonder if any of them were, like, inspired by the others.
Well, we'll cover that.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to throw some numbers at you, so let me know if you need me to repeat anything.
Okay.
At the time of this article, which was published in January of 2003, it said, in the past decade, there were an average of 50 familicides a year nationwide, or about 1.4 per 100,000 households.
Wow, okay.
And in Oregon, that statistic rises to 2.5 per 100,000 households. So it goes 1.4 nationwide up to 2.5 in Oregon.
So not even just for that year, but on
overall,
average.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Or in the past decade, they said.
Yeah. Okay.
So from 93 to 03. Ewing, who also wrote a book called Fatal Families, The Dynamics of Intrafamilial Homicide, said he believes it's not uncommon for men faced with the prospect of financial ruin, marital infidelity, or public humiliation to fantasize about killing their family. Most resist the idea, but a similar crime in the local news could make familicide seem like a more legitimate option. He said, I sort of call it a contagion theory.
Ooh, interesting. I'm just like, I feel like if I lost all my money, my first thought wouldn't be like, let me murder my family.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's not just like, oh, I lost all our money. It's like stealing from their jobs on top of losing all their money, on top of getting fired and not telling your spouse that you're fired. You know, it's like so many crazy lengths that people will go to.
I think of like, who was that young woman who killed her family because she was pretending she was going to college, but she really wasn't? Oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking. They've covered it on a lot of big true crime podcasts.
Oh, wow. Oh my God, I do not know this. I know a guy that did.
Jennifer Pan.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That story's wild.
Yeah,
too.
she hired people. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought of that because it was kind of like an anomaly.
Yeah, I did. I totally forgot about that. But yes, that story's fucked. A psychiatry professor named Philip Resnick, who has testified in high-profile trials of people accused of killing their families, said that most family slayings are committed by younger white men who have suffered devastating losses. Eye roll.
No, I mean, obviously shit happens and stuff sucks, but a lot of people experience devastating losses and don't kill their families.
Yeah, so it's like try therapy. Ewing added that these men have an exaggerated belief that their family can't survive without them. He said, quote, the irony, of course, is that your family is so important that you kill them. The father believes the family can't make it without him, so they're better off dead.
Fucking patriarchy.
Fucking patriarchy.
As they say on Wine and Crime.
Yes. Literally, my next thing is in all caps. How noble. Portland-based attorney Paul Moniz. Okay. It's spelled M-O-N-E-S, and I want to say Moans.
So Paul Moniz. I like it.
Paul Moniz said that men who kill their families are usually described by friends and family members as devoted fathers and husbands, but evidence of serious dysfunction is often found after doing just simple routine investigations.
Okay.
Duh.
Shocking.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk about the actual cases that happened in Oregon in this 1 year period. It's interesting how they all pretty much line up with what all those dudes that I just told you about said.
Yeah. So they all are very much like typical of this kind of crime.
Yes. Everything just like fits a pattern.
And nothing is original.
I know. It's like, get your own moves and ideas. So buckle the fook up, because this is like seriously going to be a bad trip.
Okay. Did you just bat at me like a sheep?
Possibly.
Okay. Just wanted to confirm I heard you correctly.
Yeah, I think you did. All right. We're starting with Christian Longo. Christian Longo was born in Ypsilanti Township, Michigan in 1974 to some strict-ass Jehovah's Witness parents. Although he received training at a young age to practice door-to-door ministry, he said he had a happy childhood. And I'm like, no, you didn't.
He could have been loved and cared for and still had to do some weird shit, you know?
Yeah, I just think that if you're doing that every day as a child, your childhood probably isn't as happy as you think it is. Doesn't mean you were, like, abused. It just means probably not great.
Yeah, I guess if you enjoyed it.
Yeah, true. At age 19, Longo's heart was stolen in a church parking lot by a woman who was 7 years older than him.
How old was he?
19.
Okay, good.
Her name was Mary Jane Baker.
Oh, okay.
Mary Jane, I highlighted it and made it green.
Oh, is this is this not real? Did he really just get into weed?
No, I just like.
Oh, I thought you were like making a joke. And no. You're like, his heart was stolen. Like,
no. He really met a woman who was named Mary Jane Baker.
Oh, okay.
And they would eventually get married and she would be Mary Jane Longo.
Oh, I like Mary Jane Baker better because she's baked on Mary Jane.
I love it. Even before their wedding, there were some financial struggles going on. Longo bought Mary Jane a 3.5 carat diamond engagement ring on a payment plan.
Is that big? I don't know anything about diamonds.
It's big. I was helping someone at work look at engagement rings for their fiance now. It happened. Yay, congrats. And 1 carat diamonds are like a good chunk of money, like $1,000, you know, plus a band. It could be like $2,000 on the lower end.
Okay. So that's, I don't know. I don't know how much people normally spend on wedding rings and engagement rings, but like, that shit's expensive.
Yeah, but to already have financial struggles and then get a 3.5 carat diamond, it's like, why'd you do that?
Yeah.
Why'd you have to do that?
Yikes. You got to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah. 1 month he didn't have the money to make his payment and the rent, so he stole $108 from the store he worked at. But apparently the next morning he felt so bad that he left a check replacing the money and a resignation letter, and rent didn't get paid that month.
Oh, man.
So he paid for the ring and not rent.
And he lost his job because of it.
Yeah, yeah. So after this incident as well, he was ratted on to the congregation elders and was punished, restricted from getting married in the Kingdom Hall, which I guess that's like a big deal to do if Jehovah is your jam.
Yeah.
So
like, sorry, you can't get married in the church, basically. Right.
Yeah. And Longo said, I was determined that I would never do anything along those lines again.
Along those lines again.
Anything that was not only illegal, but immoral, unsavory.
Unsavory.
And it's like, bro, this is a podcast episode about familicide.
Yeah, you're about to do something real unsavory.
Real immoral. Longo started a construction cleanup subcontracting.
That was terrifying.
Oh, my God.
You just malfunctioned.
I did. I do that. So he started a construction cleanup subcontracting business, which was booming in the beginning, but then it quickly plunged into debt due to a too rapid expansion. But alas, Longo became obsessed with new cars, nice clothes, and tropical vacations.
I mean, aren't we all? But you just can't, most people can't afford it, so we just deal with that.
Right, and neither can he, but yet he is. He had maxed out all their credit cards before their first son Zachary was even born.
Oh my goodness.
Things obviously got harder because Mary Jane had stopped working to take care of the baby at home, and they decided to have 2 more little munchkins. Great idea when you're broke.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to look at the photo, you can see it. It's on...
All our pictures you can find on our website, badtrippod.com. We have an episode guide there, or you can check them out on our Instagram at badtrippod.
Yes. Look at the first slide.
Okay, so... who's Madison? Oh, these are the kids. I was looking from the back. Wait, who's Janet?
I don't know why it says that.
Is there
Mary Jane?
Okay.
I don't know why it says that.
Is her Janet in one of the other stories?
I don't remember right now.
Okay, so there's a picture of them as a family, 2 little girls and a little boy, all probably like 5 and under, and then the parents, and they just look like a cute, happy family.
Yeah. To keep up appearances, he lied about how well his company was doing, so well that his own father invested tens of thousands of dollars in his business.
Oh, no.
Which he obviously just like spent.
On cars.
Right. Now, all of a sudden, this dude says he won a boat and 2 jet skis. He also purchased 2 cars, but eventually one broke down and the other was repossessed from his driveway.
Bro.
So how does one fix this? Obviously make a fake driver's license, bring it to a Pontiac dealer, take a car for a test drive, and never return it.
I mean, not a bad idea.
I know. Like, he got away with it for now. His wife was like, where are the billing statements for the new car? So he made bogus statements on his computer and mailed them to their own address.
So she was like suspicious.
Yeah, she was questioning some stuff.
Okay.
He also printed false checks from companies that owed his business money and cashed them. So before long, the companies told police and he found himself in court in September of 2000. He pleaded guilty to 3 years probation and had to pay restitution. But because he continued to lie about his income, the court set the restitution payments too high and they were too much for him to actually afford.
Bro. bro.
Like, why would you keep lying? Then you can't afford that either.
You're like shooting yourself in the foot right now.
Yeah.
I'm getting like big Donald Trump energy from this.
You're going to feel that. Yeah. The Jehovah's Witness congregation learned of his forgeries along with some scandalous emails between Longo and another woman.
Oh, no, not his wife. Maybe this is Janet.
Ooh, shit. Janet's back. Mary Jane found the emails and he's like, well, you're no fun since kids. I don't love you anymore. And she's like, that's rude as fuck. But then she stays with him because she's a woman and she doesn't have a job. And
yeah,
she,
they have three kids.
Yeah. Ugh. So then he was fully kicked out of his congregation.
Okay.
He and his wife had a breakthrough.
Not a breakup or a breakdown.
Unfortunately, a breakthrough. When he promised her he would be truthful and they'd straighten out their finances, but not before giving just one last present to each other.
Are you joking?
I'm not joking. She got corrective eye surgery and he got scuba diving lessons.
Like, at least the eye surgery is something valuable and useful in your life. And he's like, oh, I want to learn how to scuba dive.
Right. What are you doing? Ugh. But that bitch was broke on broke on broke. So he secretly took out a credit card in his father's name and racked up about $100,000 in debt.
What?
Yep.
How does one get a credit card for $100,000 limit?
I mean, obviously, if his dad invested tens of thousands of dollars, he must have had money.
That's true.
So he probably didn't like have a limit.
This is all wild because if you think about it, it's like he probably could have told his dad, hey, I'm struggling. I need a little help. And I don't know his dad, but like he possibly could have helped him.
Right. It seems like if you invest in his business, you have some sort of relationship and like support and whatever.
Yeah. So I'm like, you had probably so many different ways out of this and you just kept like climbing deeper and deeper into the hole.
That's the thing, that it's like they just keep stacking it on and it's like there were so many outs in the beginning. And
yeah, like, so I get what you're saying about it. It's not like just one bad decision and they decide to kill their family.
Right, right. Well, I'm sure that happens sometimes, but freaking hopefully not. So to escape what he had done, he decided to pick up the fam and start a new life in Ohio in a warehouse with no kitchen or plumbing, which he said was paid for 6 months, but he was really just cashing more forged checks.
Oh my God. And his wife was like, yeah, that's fine. Let's move in here.
His wife was like, I swear she had like Stockholm syndrome or some shit. Because my next thing is Mary Jane fell out of touch with her family and even fought her sister when she drove to rescue her.
Oh.
So her sister drove to Ohio and just drove around because she knew like what area they were in until she found their car parked outside of this warehouse. And she was like, come back. This is fucked. And Mary Jane was like, I'm not leaving my husband.
That's so sad.
It's so sad.
Oh my God, I would physically drag you out of there with the children.
Me too. I would like get an army and like murder the dude. Just kidding. Punch him in his face.
For though. Legal reasons. That's a joke.
That's a joke, but... So a lot more bad checks happened. Stolen machinery, stolen vehicles, hawking Mary Jane's wedding ring for just a few $100, a missing persons report for Mary Jane's family, and fleeing again, but to Oregon this time.
Okay.
Oregon, ding, ding, ding. Longo found work at a Starbucks, telling his boss and coworkers he lived off a lucrative internet business, but took the part-time job because he liked the coffee.
Okay, buddy.
I know. Basically, money disappeared the second they got it. Rent wasn't paid, groceries were scarce, and he even had to steal gasoline. As he stood on the balcony of his unpaid condo, his family sleeping inside, Longo thought about how he hadn't told his wife they would have to leave the Congo soon.
Oh, boy.
Longo thought about how he hadn't told his wife.
Longo. Congo.
No, I said Longo.
I know. I'm just like.
Oh, because that's why I said. So he thought about how he hadn't told his wife they would have to leave the condo soon. And that's when he made the decision that that night, December 16th, was the beginning of the end.
Oh, no.
What? So, 3 days later, on December 19th, police were notified of a boy's body floating face down in the water near an RV park. His photo was taken and released to the media, causing a couple who occasionally babysat the children to come forward and identify the boy as 4-year-old Zachary Longo.
Oh my God, he was only four.
He was four.
And he was the oldest one.
Mm-hmm. 3 days after that, the area was searched where his body was found. And the body of a small girl was discovered weighed down with a rock in a pillowcase tied to her ankle.
Ugh.
And this was 3-year-old Sadie.
Oh, little baby.
I know. On December 27th, divers found 2 suitcases under a dock at a marina adjacent to the complex that they were living at. One contained the body of 2-year-old Madison, clothing, and a dumbbell. And the other contained the naked remains of Mary Jane, who was 34.
Oh my God. How did he fit her in a suit? I guess people fit people in suitcases a lot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Autopsies later determined the four had died from asphyxia, along with Mary Jane having signs of blunt force trauma on her face. Some say that drowning could have been the cause of death for Zachary and Madison, but it has been disputed, so I think it's officially asphyxia.
Okay.
By December 28th, Longo had been charged with murdering his family and was on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted list. His parents were cooperating with the show America's Most Wanted as well, so they were trying to help catch him.
Okay.
A tip pointed authorities to a Mexican cabana where Longo was staying with a German photographer.
What?
Yep. He told the photographer his name was Michael Finkel, a former travel writer for the New York Times.
Is that a real person that exists in the world?
Yeah, he comes back later.
Oh.
So on January 13th, 2002, so this is about, it's coming up on a month after the murders.
Okay.
Mexican federales, along with FBI agent Dan Clegg, nab Christian Longo's murdering ass.
Yes.
Longo didn't technically confess, but told police this. After December 16th, he tried to distract himself by renting a movie, working out, and going to their Starbucks Christmas party. Here, he told his coworkers his wife had left him for another man. So he was like planting seeds.
Okay. And this was even before the murders?
Yeah. So it was like the evening of the night that he murdered them. Oh, so it was right before. He said he was trying to distract himself by doing these things.
Okay.
The day after the news came out that a little boy's body was recovered, he picked up his last paycheck and bounced. Longo got to San Francisco and applied for a job at a local Starbucks, but then was like, nah, and went to Cancun, Mexico.
Oh my goodness.
Here he met a bunch of travelers, smoked the ganj, toured ancient ruins, cuddled up with, which is what the article said, but that means fucked, a travel photographer named Janina.
Oh, this is a German photographer?
Yeah. And was an all-around piece of dirty, wet garbage.
Oh, he's just like having a vacation, having the time of his life after he just murdered his family.
Right. I'm like, you're so... Bleh. Shortly before the trial, Longo pleaded guilty to the murders of Mary Jane and Madison without a deal. But he refused to enter a plea on the charges of killing Sadie and Zachary. Which, I don't understand that. But the court entered a not guilty plea on his behalf.
That's very strange.
Yeah, it's weird. During the trial, Longo was his own key witness.
Of course he was.
Of course. 2 days into his testimony, he revealed for the first time his version of events that led to the deaths of his wife and children. This is his, like, recounting of it.
Okay.
He and Mary Jane had a date on December 15th. She told him she thought things were going well for the family overall, but confronted him about lies he had been telling. He lied again. Duh. And later struggled over if he should come clean to his wife or not, realizing they didn't have much longer in their condo. He got home from work on the 16th and had some wine and cheese.
Same every day. I know. I don't get home from work because I work from home.
You stay home from work and then I just make cheese boards. When he went to bed, he said he couldn't sleep. And when Mary Jane asked him what was wrong, he disclosed many things to her. They had an all-night conversation and Mary Jane was emotional in a way he had never seen.
Oh, yeah, you don't say.
Right.
She was upset with you for lying to her for years and years?
Yeah, well, then he claimed she berated him for 45 minutes, slapped him, and told him she would never be able to trust him again.
Okay, he deserved every bit of that.
I'm like, what's wrong?
Like, he got off easy if that's all she did.
Mm-hmm. He slept on the couch that night, and the next day happened as usual. But when Mary Jane picked him up from work, she was only wearing a bathrobe, not even shoes. When they got back to the condo, Longo found Madison lifeless on the bed. He began to shake Mary Jane and ask her why she did that. She said, "You did this. You killed us." And then just like casually threw in that the other two kids were in the water.
Sure. Okay.
Right. So then he murdered her by strangulation. Then he realized Madison was still alive. So he smothered her because, quote, "even though she was breathing, I still thought of her as dead at that point."
What the?
He said that on the stand.
That doesn't even make sense.
Like, what if...
You're not even a good liar.
Like, that's a dumb lie. Like, oh. So, yeah, basically the prosecutors were like, there's no fucking way that happened. You're a straight-up killer asshole, and you're gonna rot away forever. Bye. On April 7th, 2003, after 4 hours of deliberation, the jury found Christian Longo guilty of the aggravated murders of his two children, Zachary and Sadie. And those were the two in the water.
Mm-hmm.
There's some like lawyery situation with a penalty phase where the same jury would get together to determine if he deserved the death penalty for all four murders. So this happened on April 13th. It was like a week after the initial guilty verdict.
Okay.
It took 6 hours for the jury to sentence Longo to death.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize they had the death penalty there.
They do. While the final verdict was delivered, the jury agreed to, quote, look Longo squarely in the eye, to send him a message that he didn't fool them and that he was no longer in control.
Hell yeah, jury.
I know. Shortly after the trial, Longo began his appeals process, which was estimated to run for 5 to 10 years. In 2011, he finally admitted to killing his family, but he still sits on death row in Oregon.
Wow.
And some fun bonus content for you. Michael Finkel, the man he pretended to be in Mexico, was a real guy, like you asked. He visited Longo. He didn't know him, but he visited him while he awaited trial, and a strange friendship blossomed between the two.
Ew, disgusting.
Longo charmed Finkel into believing he was innocent, but then their friendship was pretty much over when Longo took the stand and started talking.
Ugh. I mean, like, bro, come on.
I know. Finkel wrote a memoir about this called True Story, Murder, Memoir, Mea Culpa. And that was turned into a film called True Story, starring James Franco as Longo and Jonah Hill as Finkel.
What?
I had never heard of it, and I looked it up and we're watching it.
That's why you said there was a movie that was involved.
Yeah, and I was like, would you watch it with me? And you were like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, like I have no context, but yes.
But like this story with James Franco and Jonah Hill, what the...
All right, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, so that's Christian Longo for you.
Yeah, well, F-U-C-L.
F-U-C-L.
I don't even want to say your name. You don't even deserve it.
Right? All right. Next, we have Robert Bryant. On February 23rd, 2002, the night of their wedding anniversary, 37-year-old Robert Bryant set out his clothes for the next day and crawled into bed next to his wife, Janet, who was also 37. There's Janet.
Okay. That's where Janet came from.
Yes. Their four children were already tucked in bed for the night, probably dreaming of the beach vacation their father had promised them they were going on in the next few days.
Hmm.
9-year-old Alyssa and 10-year-old Ashley shared a room with twin beds, and 12-year-old Ethan and his 15-year-old brother Clayton shared a room with bunk beds. And if you want to look at the photos, you can see the fam.
Okay, so there's a photo of the couple. Probably when they were younger, they look very young there.
Yeah, he does look really young. That's the only photo I could find.
Right in this picture, he honestly looks exactly like his son, Clayton.
I know. I thought the same thing.
But yeah, you have her name is Jane.
What is wrong with me?
Oh my goodness.
Maybe it autocorrected. No, it didn't.
Well, there's just like four little kids in their little school photos.
Yeah.
What year was this? 2003?
2002.
Oh, so I was Ashley's age.
Ew, that's weird to think about.
Oh, that's really sad.
Well, if that's true, then that means I was just a year younger than the younger one.
Yeah.
Oh, ooh.
Here we go, making it about me.
I know, right? Shauna's like, oh, it's sad for me. I was her age.
Oh, my goodness.
Sometime during the night, Bryant got out of bed and loaded his 12-gauge shotgun with bullets he had purchased earlier that evening with a $100 bill. Starting with the children's rooms and working his way to the master, he killed each one of his family members in their beds, except Janet, who's thought to have heard the blast and tried to react, but was found on the floor a few feet away from the bed with one foot entangled in the sheets.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like she had tried to run and she got caught up. After murdering his entire family, Bryant made his way to the living room where he knelt with the shotgun under his chin and pulled the trigger, ending his life.
Yikes.
Yamhill County Sheriff Norm Hand said, it was very quick, one bedroom to the next bedroom to the master bedroom. It was 19 days until their bodies were found after neighbors reported to the police that they hadn't seen anyone in a hot minute in or out of the house.
Oh, my God. Wait, so you said it was summer?
No, they were in school.
Oh.
It was February.
Oh, okay.
So that'll come up. Using a ladder from behind the house, a deputy creeped up to look in a window and saw Brian's body on the living room floor. When they went in, they obviously found the six bodies inside. And change from the $100 bill was found in Bryant's wallet, and the receipt for the shotgun shells dated 7:24 p.m. on February 23rd was found in his van. So it's interesting to me that he bought the bullets that day. It seems almost like a rash decision.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I know, like the other one seemed so like...
calculated.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone wondered, why did he do this? Especially when he was described to investigators by most as mild-mannered, deeply religious, and polite.
Aren't they all?
They were even called the perfect family.
Mm-mm.
Sounds like a murderer to me.
Don't trust a perfect family.
Don't trust a hoe. Never trust a hoe. A little background about the family. About a year before the murders, Bryant moved his family from California to McMinnville, Oregon, which is about 40 miles southwest of Portland. When living in California, the family practiced as Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh,
interesting.
I'm sensing a trend.
Right?
I just want to be clear that I'm in no way implying that all Jehovah's Witnesses are murderers.
No, not at all. Just some of them, clearly. Bryant held Bible studies every Tuesday at his home in Shingle Springs, Cali, baby.
That's a cute city name, Shingle Springs.
Yeah. The children were homeschooled and had other limited interactions. One neighbor said they were sort of standoffish people.
Mm.
They just like really kept to themselves and didn't want the kids out with others. And it's just like,
Yeah, it's like that's their right, but it's a little odd.
Like, what are you hiding them from?
The sinners.
All the sinners. Well, something went down in the J Witness Shingle Springs congregation that resulted in Bryant getting his family banned.
Oh, whoa. I wonder what that something was.
I know. I couldn't find it, but church elder Mark Messier said that this was due to Bryant's, quote, unrepentant behavior that violated church beliefs.
Oh, I wonder what that was.
I know.
Like, was he violent? Was he like, I don't know, did he gamble? I don't know.
Yeah, it's just weird. It just seems so interesting. So not only were they shunned by their church, but also their own families. And they were even worried that relatives would try and get custody of their four children.
Okay, so I wonder if they were like abusive.
I know, it's so weird. But then everyone that they talked to described them as like kind and loving. And it just seems like that would get around if it was in the church, you know?
Interesting.
It just, I can't think of what it is. If anyone knows, let us know. Later, Oregon residents who knew Bryant told media he had confided in them. One saying Bryant had told them he had left a big problem in California and they had actually fled out of fear in the middle of the night.
Whoa, okay. Mm-hmm.
And another saying Bryant told her, quote, he had to get away from the grandparents because they were trying to brainwash the children.
I wonder if like maybe they just weren't super religious.
Right. And they were like, we want to take the kids out. And like, I don't know.
Maybe.
But why would that get you kicked out?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it makes sense why the grandparent thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's all just very fishy.
So on top of all that church shit, I read that they had filed for bankruptcy. So I guess at that point, he was like, we need to get the heck out of Dodge.
Okay, this is my theory. I have nothing to back this up whatsoever. But maybe they were like addicted to something or had a gambling problem or like something like that. That's like immoral and also causes you to lose your money. Quote unquote,
and
immoral,
like,
you know.
Put your children in danger as well, depending on what it was.
Yeah. Especially if it was like a drug situation or something like
that. That makes
sense. So wild speculation, but who knows?
Yeah. Pretty much right away when they got to McMinnville, Bryant's landscape and maintenance was created, registered at the RV park address that they had moved into. The business was aggressively advertised both in newspapers and with leaflets, and it actually took off.
Sorry, what kind of business?
Bryant's landscape and maintenance.
Okay.
He even proposed to the RV park owner, Howard Angel, that he should hire him to re-landscape the entire park. But then he called Angel back in November saying he had actually taken on too much other work. Like he had money coming in. I mean, he was, you know.
He was so busy with his work.
Right. So it seems like money shouldn't have been a problem. So who knows if that was the truth, whatever. In December, the family put a double-wide mobile home on a two-acre lot that they had purchased, where they had planned to live only until they finished the new house they were going to build. So they were like staying in a mobile home on that lot, and then they were going to start building their house.
Okay.
They even enrolled the children in public school in Oregon.
Okay, that's interesting.
So their teachers said the children were bright students who showed an interest in school. They all had many friends, and there were absolutely no warning signs of anything sinister going on at the home. They all said the children were engaged, excited. Not that that means any, you know, for sure.
Totally. Like, people can hide things, but you would think that among four kids, there would be, like, something that gave people pause.
Exactly. So that's just, like, another thing. If you want to look at another photo, you can see the trailer that they were living in, and then the little map there just shows the distance that they traveled to get out of California.
Okay. Got it. So they lived near San Francisco. And then they went up to the Portland area.
Yeah. So Bryant had several landscaping jobs that were coming up as the weather changed in the spring, which was basically like promised income.
Mm-hmm.
They had recently paid off what they owed on their $96,000 property, and they had a reported monthly income of $7,500 from their landscaping business.
Oh, that's a good amount of money.
Right.
Especially 20 years ago.
Yeah. But they had, you know, declared bankruptcy in California. The Bryant's California bankruptcy attorney said the bankruptcy took care of their financial problems. They should have been fine. But his sister said that about 2 months before the murders, Bryant told her that their family only had food for 2 months and that after that, they were all going to starve.
What? If you keep making money, you can buy more food.
I know. So just like stuff doesn't really match up. But the only thing that I heard negatively about his finances was what he said to his sister. That's the only, other than that, his like financial manager and their reported income all seem to be like very stable.
Interesting. I wonder if he like owed someone money or something.
I don't know. Yeah. It just like makes you think. I'm like, Their fresh start seemed to be going well based on everything I read, really, like I just said. So yeah, I mean, they don't know what happened.
This is so mysterious.
I know.
And that's it?
That's the end of that one.
Oh, that was like dissatisfying, but in like a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a very interesting story, but it's disappointing that we don't know the answers.
Like I would like a nice little bow on top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know why.
Well, rest in peace to that family. It's very sad.
Yeah. It is sad. Ugh.
So many kids.
Yeah. Like, why do you all have so many kids? It's really rude, honestly.
I like how that's a lot of kids now, but back in the day, you know, like 100, 200 years ago, that's like, oh, you only have 4 kids.
Right. It's like 4 is nothing. When I hear people that are like, I want 7 kids. I'm like, are you a gazillionaire?
Right.
Sorry. Are you Elon Musk? All right. Thanks for sticking with me, guys. I know this is a longo episode.
Oh, my God.
I just thought of that.
Oh, I was like, this bitch had that written down.
It was not written down. All right, we're on to our last story of familicide.
Just to recap, that first story was December 2001, and then the second story was February 2002.
Yep, so just a couple months later.
Wow, okay.
All right, and now our final story is December of 2002, so now we're hitting the year mark.
Got it.
December 21st, 2002 should have been another average day for Edward Morris and his family, but instead he surprised them with a trip to the Tillamook State Forest near the Oregon coast.
Oh, just a fun fact from my research. Tillamook Cheese Factory is the biggest cheese factory in the country.
That's fascinating. Okay, I love Tillamook cheese. It's really good.
It is good.
And I was in the Tillamook Forest just a couple weeks ago.
Oh, cool. I didn't know you were there.
Yeah.
I love that. So anyway, back to the murder.
Back to that murder thing we were talking about. Going on this trip was Edward's rifle, Renee.
Oh no, these poor women are getting so much disrespect from you today.
I'm so sorry. It's been a while. Ugh. His wife, Renee, who was 31 and 7 months pregnant.
Oh.
His 10-year-old son, Bryant. Ooh, Bryant. Weird. That was the other person's last name.
Ooh, it's all connected.
8-year-old daughter, Alexis, and 4-year-old son, Jonathan. If you want to look at the photo to break your heart one more time.
There's just so many little babies getting murdered.
Keep in your head, she's pregnant too with like a 7-month, you know, it's not like a month old.
Yeah. It's really sad because it's just like a picture of them in front of the Christmas tree, like a little happy family at the holidays.
Right. And it's like, who knew that years later,
around Christmas,
you would all be murdered. Great. On the way to the beach house they were supposedly staying at, driving through the Tillamook State Forest along Highway 6, Morris had other plans.
What is with these families talking about going on beach vacations, but deciding to kill their families instead?
If you live in the Pacific Northwest, never trust your husband if he wants to take you to the beach.
Never.
You will be murdered. He stopped the car, shot and stabbed his wife, shot their 2 sons, then drove further to a deserted area and stabbed his daughter 18 times.
What? Why was he so aggressive with his daughter?
We'll get into it. So after this, he just fucking left their bodies on the side of the road in just like a snowy ditch with some shrubbery. And it's like just sicko, just disgusting. Attempting to change his appearance, he shaved his head and grew a mustache, which I know they mean like within the time he got caught. But to me, I just picture him like, like squeezing his hands.
Pushing real hard for the hair to just push out.
Yeah, just see mustache hair sprouting.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't mean to make light of a murder, but that part really made me cackle.
So he has barely any hair to begin with. So if you shaved it, it's not like he's not going to look that different.
Yeah, he just is like goes totally bald.
He goes from like mostly bald to totally bald.
Yeah, he goes from a little hair on the side to bald.
Also, he has a mustache in this picture.
Yeah, so maybe he did sometimes, maybe he didn't at the time, though.
So right.
And then let it grow out.
Totally, but all I'm saying is, like, he's not doing a very good job disguising himself.
Like, people recognize him with the mustache.
Yes, it's not brand new.
Yeah, agreed. The bodies were found in the snow by elk hunters, who immediately alerted police, and they realized pretty quickly that he was the only family member not murdered on the side of the road.
You don't say.
You don't. So they blew his shit up. Morris's photo and his van's license plate number began flashing on TV screens in most living rooms from coast to coast because authorities didn't know which direction he would travel to try and escape.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent it to everyone. The publicity led to many reported sightings that all turned out to be inaccurate until they weren't. Mwah-ha-ha.
That's why you gotta look at every lead.
Every lead, baby.
Defund the police, but give money to detectives who actually do stuff.
Amen. 13 days after the slayings, two siblings in their 50s, Linda and Tom Martin, were driving home from Idaho when they saw a gray 1993 Dodge Caravan with license plate WSH171. It was Morris.
Dun, dun, dun.
Linda's like, I just look at license plate. I have a habit of it. And that one, I just remembered from seeing it on the TV.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I don't even know my own license plate.
I don't either.
Ooh. I have a picture of it saved in my phone.
Me too. So if I need it, I have it.
Yeah.
Not in my brain. I know my driver's license number.
Oh, that's weird of you.
I've been using it a lot lately. I don't know why.
Unemployment.
Yeah, it's true. I'm unemployed. So they got off the interstate as soon as they could and called police. And then they got back in the car to catch up to him so they could follow him and keep track of him.
Wow. Oh, because did they not have a cell phone, I'm guessing?
No. Yeah, they didn't have a cell phone. So they had stopped at a little store off an exit.
Wow.
And then hopped back on the highway and followed him.
Vroom, vroom.
Vroom, vroom, motherfucker. About 20 minutes later, he ended up pulling off and turning into a Rite Aid parking lot. So they went to the phone at the Safeway next door and they called the police again to update on their location.
Hell yeah.
So this was all going down in Baker City, which was about 350 miles from where he lived in Portland.
Okay.
All right. Look at the next photo. You'll see Linda and Tom and you'll see the van.
Ooh. Okay. Is that Grandma Nancy?
I think it might be.
Linda Martin looks kind of like our dad's stepmom.
Or not Grandma Nancy.
What is it? Does it say something is gay?
Maybe.
Day. It says something day.
It's probably like blessed the day. The day is blessed.
I was like, this man is progressive, but he murdered his family.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like gay rights.
Oh, and by the way, I don't think I was clear, but I was referring to a sticker on the back of his car.
Oh, yeah. He has a couple of stickers on the rear window. So like some American flags, a couple. So, you know,
he
loves Trump.
He's a patriot. He probably stormed the Capitol if he's free right now, which I hope he's not.
He was there. He was the man in the bison horns.
Oh.
So city officer Sergeant Doug Schrade met with city detective John Shepard. They didn't want to bombard Morris inside the store because they were worried about the shopper's safety. So they decided to lay in wait, hiding around the corner.
Smart.
Smart.
My voice cracks. Smart.
Smart. Morris came out after only about 10 minutes. So picture this. Bald. Mustache, wire-rimmed glasses, a black trench coat, and a black golf hat, having purchased nothing. So he like went in for 10 minutes and came out totally empty-handed.
Suspicious.
When they pointed their guns at him and ordered him to the ground, he complied, and Sergeant Schrade said that he was even pretty humble. I'm like, what does that even mean? He just murdered his family and there are guns pointed at him.
Right, like what? He's humble because he didn't try to run? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, so whatever, Schrade.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Fucking Schrade.
Not, I fuck the murderer is what I meant, but.
Yeah, me too. He plainly asked police if they found his family. Casual. Just like, did you find my family?
Like, imagine if they hadn't. They'd be like, you're what?
They wanted to interview him right away and decided to call in Randy Crutcher, 52 years old, who had worked as a police officer for 29 years, his last 19 being with the Oregon State Police. After Morris was all set up in one of their comfiest offices, they were like, we're going to make him comfortable and we're going to get all the info out of him. He started talking while Crutcher, Detective Kirk McCormick, and Undersheriff Ken Dreyes all listened in.
Okay, Kirk McCormick. It's fun to say.
Kirk McCormick. I hadn't said it out loud. It is fun to say. So, Shauna, there are literally hours of his confession, full ass confession.
Is it like, could we watch it if we wanted?
No, it's audio, but I couldn't find it to listen to, but I read it.
Like, okay, you read a transcript?
So I'm going to read you some of it. I have quite a few quite a few quotes in here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I should have said trigger warning this whole ass episode. Trigger warning.
Yeah. I mean, it's a true crime podcast.
Yeah. We did a disclaimer. Familicide isn't pretty. There was a really good line from an article that I got a ton of my information from by the Baker City Herald. And this is the line. And all the while, a Sony cassette recorder hummed along, preserving on a thin strip of magnetic tape every word, sob, and chuckle that made up a story of a mass murder.
Ooh. Eerie.
Eerie. So yeah, in this confession, so many more details come out. It was a way deeper dive than I intended it on being, but YOLO. So all the following is from his tape confession. First, we'll do the reason for the murders. I do want to throw in that the Morris family's life centered largely on the conservative St. John's Wesleyan Church, but it didn't seem like their religion had anything to do with the murders like the other two men had had. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to throw in that they were very religious.
Okay, but they were not Jehovah's Witness.
No, not Jehovah's Witness. I think it's Catholic. I don't know. St. John's Church.
Oh, yeah. I think mostly Catholic people have saints.
So Edward said that the main issue was money. Quote, I haven't been a very good provider lately. I felt like half of a person. Miserable. Terrified. End quote.
Oh, so you were sad that you weren't making money, so you slaughtered your family. That makes sense.
The details are tragic. He had blown almost $40,000 in the last 6 months.
On what?
It didn't say. It just said like he was spending all the money.
Like you don't even have a nice car.
Yeah. Okay. This gets wild. He also said that all his life he wanted to be a hitman for the mob and Renee would never approve of his new career. Quote, so I had to get rid of my family.
Okay. There's something mentally wrong with this man.
Yeah. So next is how it all went down. This is graphic. It's gonna be a couple minutes, so skip forward, I don't know, 2 minutes if you want to skip it. Sean is pressing a fake skip button, but she cannot. Morris told his wife he had a surprise for her, so he stopped the car and walked to the back of the minivan. The children were all asleep in the back seat. He grabbed one of the .22 caliber pistols he had purchased just 2 days before at a Portland gun shop, tucked it into his waistband, and had a pellet gun in the other hand. Morris told Crutcher that at that moment he considered getting back in the van and driving home, but then said he realized how ridiculous it would be to explain to his wife that he had planned on killing her but changed his mind. Because he didn't have an excuse of then why he was in the back, because he didn't have a surprise for her. Are you fucking kidding me?
I mean, what? Then you're like, oh no, I forgot it at home. It was really important. We need to turn around.
Right.
You fucko.
Ugh. So Morris said, I was chickening out, but I didn't give myself any back door. I loved Renee so much, I didn't want her to think I was a horrible person. It's so twisted. He walked up to her door, telling her to keep her eyes closed, pointed the pellet gun at her, and pulled the trigger. He said he didn't have time to make a silencer for the pistols that he bought, and he was afraid that someone would hear the gunshots, which is why he used the pellet gun. But he said, I'm ignorant about guns. I thought the pellet gun would kill her just like a .22 caliber bullet would.
I don't even know what a pellet gun is, to be honest. It's like an airsoft.
I don't really know. I guess I should have looked that up, but sorry. But I know it's like, it's painful, but it's not going to kill you.
Okay.
He said, for some reason, I thought Renee would just die, but she didn't. It wasn't like in the movies. So then he shot her again, but with the .22 pistol. And that wasn't fatal either.
Oh, God. Where did he shoot her?
I think maybe in the chest.
Oh, God.
Then his sons woke up, so he shot them both with the .22. Then he drove a short distance, recalling that Renee stayed alive for about 45 minutes after he shot her the second time.
45 minutes?
Yeah. And he's,
poor woman.
Right. And he's like, she was in and out of consciousness.
Oh, that's nauseating.
When she woke up, he said that Renee told him that she loved him, Jesus loved him, and that they both forgave him for what he had done. I'm like, I don't believe you.
Oh my God. I don't, even if that's true, that's so sad.
Okay, it gets worse here. He then stabbed Renee in the lungs because he was too afraid to fire the gun again. Then he stabbed his daughter, and he told them 5 to 10 times, but the autopsy proved it was 18 times. God. And I think you asked earlier, I think it's because he just didn't want to shoot the gun again, and he...
Yeah, and he... He killed the boys because they'd woken up and maybe the daughter hadn't.
And I think the daughter hadn't, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So over the next few days, he traveled home back to Portland, through Idaho, into Utah, and finally to Las Vegas. He told Crutcher that he thought he had enough cash to start his new life as a man who killed people for their money.
Cool. What a fun job.
Right? He planned to dress like a businessman so he wouldn't seem suspicious and buy a farm where he could bury his victims' bodies.
Oh, he had it all planned out.
He sure did. He figured he could make as much as $3,000 a day. Like, okay. He was going to leave his minivan at the Seattle-Tacoma airport, take a train to Vegas, hoping that police would believe that he was murdered too and the assailant had stolen his van and like fled on a plane.
Oh yeah, and that's why your body just hasn't been found.
Exactly, like that he murdered you elsewhere, that doesn't make sense.
Like, it's not impossible, but it's stupid.
Yeah, well, his plan was foiled because he found out the train doesn't even go from the airport to Vegas, so he couldn't even do that.
What a dork.
Then he traveled all the fuck over and came up with all these crazy schemes to become a murderous wonder or some shit. Like, he wanted to be a famous murderer. Like, it was so weird.
How do you think you're going to get into this business? You're just going to walk up to someone and be like, hey, you need anyone killed?
No, his plan was just to pick people to murder and then steal their money. Not even like a hitman.
Oh!
Like, he was just going to go murder people and rob them, thinking, oh, I can make up to $3,000 a day doing this. So he wanted to be a hitman for the mob, but then he was like, I can't get into that. So he's like, now I'm just going to go murder people.
Okay. I don't even know what to think about that. Okay.
It's all a whole mess.
I like how $3,000, like he was like, yeah, this is what I can make.
That's
like, where does that
it.
Come from?
I don't know.
Yeah. And also killing someone for three. I mean, he killed his family for free. So
true that. So he kept having these plans to kill people and then wouldn't be able to do it. Like, there were many times he told the investigators, Crutcher and the other two, I wanted to kill this person and then I went to go do it and I chickened out. So he literally just can't even do it still, which I'm glad.
I'm glad too, but come on, bro.
It's like, bro.
I mean, he was like scared to shoot the gun. Like, he's not going to be a good killer, even
obviously,
though he is a killer.
Right. He ended up in Phoenix for a while, but then decided, oh no, there's no hope for me in being a killer. I'll just go turn myself in. But first, I want to see the Grand Canyon.
That makes sense.
He said, it was pretty, but I really needed to have my wife there. Renee and I had always wanted to go to the Grand Canyon. I kept seeing all these beautiful families.
Ugh.
I know, like, you could have taken her.
Okay, so like, something about this story compared to the other stories feels different to me. And it's like, he seems so delusional.
Yeah.
Whereas the other men obviously were not, I don't know, they weren't good people, but like, they seemed a little more logical.
Right, right. So the journey home to confess began. Morris told Crutcher that he stopped in Boise on the morning of January 4th, intending to buy 100 feet of rope. He was going to use this to haul his wife's body back into the van, and he would get his children's bodies too, so he could have them all in the van when he turned himself in.
Ew, and how long had it been?
Let's see, this was on January 4th, and the murders were on like December 21st.
Okay, so there's definitely been some decomp.
Oh, yeah. And they had already been found.
Right. Yeah. But he didn't know that.
Oh, true. True.
I'm just like, he's not thinking anything through. None of it makes any sense.
It makes no sense. So that's why he stopped at Rite Aid to buy the rope.
Oh,
he said they only had 50 foot lengths of rope. So he left the store, which is when he was arrested and why he had nothing when he walked out.
Oh,
doesn't that make
weird.
It grosser?
That makes it so creepy.
Yeah. In the interview, Morris had even asked Crutcher for the death penalty, but the Tillamook County District Attorney William Porter was like, hell nah. First, because of the 58 convicted murderers sentenced to Oregon's death row since 1984, only two had been executed and 27 had their sentences commuted from death to life in prison.
Mm.
So he's like, there's no point. It doesn't happen anyways. And second, Renee Morris's parents wanted finality in the case, which would be impossible with a death penalty sentence due to years of mandatory appeals.
Oh, that makes sense.
So they were like, we don't want to have to keep coming back every few years to like...
Like, they're not going to kill him anyways.
Right.
So.
We don't want to petition this guy to stay in prison because he has to. Like, ugh. Tillamook County Circuit Judge David Hontke questioned Morris's mental fitness for trial after he volunteered for the death penalty, like I just said. He attempted suicide and said he would represent himself with God as his co-counsel.
Cool.
Yeah. So in March, Morris was sent to be evaluated at the Oregon State Hospital, where he was ruled fit to stand trial. Morris had been charged with 7 counts of aggravated murder, 1 for each victim, and 1 extra for each of his 3 victims under the age of 14.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so
I didn't know that was a thing.
Me either. I guess they double it, or at least did at the time.
So they don't count the unborn baby...
I guess they
right?
didn't, but right. I have heard cases where they have, I'm pretty sure, depending on if they're in a certain month.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of factors involved.
Right, but I mean, if they can get him for seven and not have to fight that, totally. They were just like, let's just do this, you know. As a lawyer, that's what I would have done. The case never did actually go to trial, though, because on September 20th, 2004, Morris pleaded guilty to all seven counts.
Good.
At his final sentencing that November, Judge Hankey sentenced Morris to four consecutive life terms. He had to promise not to appeal the life terms in his plea agreement and was reminded that there would be no parole and no mitigation of his sentence of any kind. So that, it's not changed, and that's your sentence.
Okay, so he's there forever.
Yep. The only thing he said as he left the courthouse was that it would cost taxpayers $40 million to keep him locked up for the rest of his life. So he was just like, this is going to cost you $40 million because he wanted the death penalty. But it's like, sit in your mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, also, I'd pay $40 million for that. Just like, don't keep people in jail who have done like stupid bullshit.
Right. There's one more photo if you want to take a look. See, it's just like, oh, it's Randy Crutcher, the guy that interviewed him and got all the info out of him. And then it's his dumbass, just his stupid face.
Why does Randy Crutcher look exactly like him?
I know, they look so alike. Oh my God, ew.
I thought you made a mistake. I was really confused.
I didn't.
Randy Crutcher looks just like him, you guys.
They could be siblings, but really not in the one on the right as much.
But in that first picture?
Oh yeah, kind of, you're right.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Conspiracy.
They
look very similar. No shade to Randy Crutcher.
But look at that classic prison jumpsuit.
Yeah, it kind of looks like something you'd buy on like Shein.
Yeah, or like something you would get at Party City.
That too.
All right, so to finish this lovely tale, I just want to say that surprisingly, crime experts say that there's little likelihood that the Morris and Bryant cases were copycat killings of the Longo case. Copycat cases, they say, are more common in hate crimes, arson, and vandalism.
Wow. So they just did it of their own accord.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you have to think that there's some inspiration there.
Or like, you know, it crossed their mind even if it wasn't inspired by it.
Because the Longo case was so blown up. Mm-hmm. And it was like obviously before both of these that there's no way that they wouldn't have known about it. You know?
Like they very well could have done this on their own without that case happening.
Right. Yeah. So that's familicide.
That's horrifying, but those were very interesting stories.
Thanks. Thanks for sticking through it. I know it was a lot of info and kind of long, but I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's a good episode back.
Yeah, right. Welcome back to the lovely life we're living.
Once again, apologize for my voice. Hopefully it'll be better next time.
It'll make editing easier. I can just blame it on Shauna's voice.
There you go.
Hey.
Anyway, that's the end of our first Oregon episode.
Yas.
We will be back next week with some mini stories.
We're giving you a bit of a detour.
That was so upsetting. As always, if you want to see the sources of information for these cases or look at pictures, you can go to our website, badtrippod.com. There's also a link in the show notes, and you can check out our Instagram at badtrippod. We would also very much appreciate positive reviews on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, we have like a solid 55 listeners that are consistent every episode, and we only have like 26 reviews.
And some of them are bad.
Yeah, and you need to like step it up a little, please.
No, we're very grateful for that you listen. Honestly, like the fact that we only like 55 is not a lot.
No, it's not. But
the fact that we have 55 people who are willing to listen to us is pretty cool.
It's really cool. And like, honestly, we want to hear from you guys. If you have any stories you want to tell us or recommendations on, you know, things you want us to cover, or even if you hear like a wacky headline and you send it to us. Yeah. I love that shit.
Yeah. And we're going to keep this thing going even, you know.
We're doing this for fun and for ourselves. We're glad you guys are around.
But we'd love for you to be part of it if you're interested in that, you know, holler at us.
Holler at us. And, you know, I hope we come out Tuesdays as we should. But I'm also, again, in school and Sean is working a shite ton.
We're doing our best.
And I'm going back to work. So we're doing our best and we will be around and we love you.
One more plug for my TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
I'm posting. Okay, so here's what it is. I'm posting like interesting stories that I find. Some of them are stories we've covered on the podcast. Some are brand new. They're not all true crime. It's like just kind of interesting rabbit holes that I find on the internet.
It's fun, though. She does. I mean, I don't know TikTok. You guys are probably like, yeah, duh, everyone does this. But like she puts photos and she's like floating in front of it and her makeup always looks cute. So
thanks.
And we will end with that voice crack. Sean is going through puberty.
It's really hard. That was not intentional. I've just been talking too much.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Thank you for joining us
on this bad trip.